It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azhatalin? Then perhaps they will. But then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
Okay. Well, I had an intro, but I think I'll save it for next week so we can talk about what we just talked about the moment before we started recording.
Yeah.
So I want to do this story just right.
Okay.
Let's start with your experience.
Mine.
You powered up the computer to log on to this Zoom call. And what happened?
What happened?
Yes.
I logged on to the Zoom call.
And?
I don't know. You told me a humorous story about,
yes.
You were laughing when I got here.
Something that had happened in between. Yes.
You were laughing when I got here. That's.
Oh, you must not heard it. Like, it was almost exactly like you. I saw you at the moment I saw the thing that made me laugh. So I assumed it looked like you logged in and I immediately laughed.
Oh, okay. So when I log in, there's a big block of text in the middle of my screen. So I don't see you for a little bit. After you see me, I don't see you for a little while.
All right. Well, then it's less exciting from William's perspective. But I think I have talked about this before on the podcast. There is a YouTube channel called The Bad Movie Bible. And it is a creation of a gentleman who spent years researching a book he wrote called The Bad Movie Bible about terrible movies. And in the process of doing that, he had a lot of extra research. And so he started making YouTube videos. And they vary. Some are about the making of specific films. Some are things about specifically nutso directors, stuff like that. But a lot of his videos, and the ones I primarily watch, are called Borrowing Blockbusters. And they basically take a movie that was very influential and then sort of chart the history of people copying that movie. So, for example, in the video I was watching, it's Nightmare on Elm Street. And so they showed Nightmare on Elm Street. Well, they said, like, so here's Nightmare on Elm Street. And then here's all the movies that stole from it. Throughout the decades and throughout different countries and things like that. And they're very interesting. They're very funny. And they also give me lots of new ideas for bad movies to watch, which we all know I love doing. So anyway, this one I'm watching about Nightmare on Elm Street had gotten to the movie Boogeyman 2, which apparently is a pretty good like clone of Nightmare on Elm Street 3, which many people find their favorite Nightmare on Elm Street. And it has nothing to do with the original Boogeyman, which is good because apparently that sucked. And in fact, I've never seen it because I heard that it was just dumb. But he was talking about this movie's kind of fun. And he said, and it's fun because they say Boogeyman a lot and it's kind of ridiculous. And then they cut to a scene I was watching in which somebody was looking at a chart and telling what I believe is our protagonist, so you're in here primarily for Boogeyman related delusions. And then the guy making the video was like, yeah, you always give it a technical name, so maybe it won't sound as ridiculous. Hard cut to the moment William is logging in, the head psychiatrist played by Tobin Bell saying in a completely straight face, the technical term is boogie phobia. So that's when William logged on. So immediately William logged on and to me just losing my shit over here because of the technical term, a boogie phobia. So that's a little sliver of behind the pancakes for you all, free of charge. So that's the kind of things that happen. Boogie phobia. I do have another open that I want to talk about. But we have to do two in a row here, so I'll save it for the next time because I didn't have anything planned there.
Is it technically redundant? Because boogeyman is this term we use for really anything that scares a person in a way. I mean, it's not.
Yeah.
So it's like you're afraid of the thing you're afraid of. I mean, or maybe it's a tautology. I don't know. Boogie phobia. I don't know. Unless you're talking about disco music, and that's what is boogie phobia.
I'm scared to dance. Scared
to dance. I
John Lithgow in Footloose probably had boogie phobia.
Boogie phobia. Yeah, good one.
Prompted by his son being trampled to death at a sock hop. I can't remember. It was a real tenuous link to dance that pissed off. And to be fair, I don't think I've actually seen the original Footloose. We saw the remake in the theater. Because Trish was very excited, but I don't know that I've actually seen it.
I think it would have to be a fear of a certain kind of dancing, like maybe dancing that could reasonably be perceived as suggestive or intimate.
All right, so no lumbata, and for safety reasons, no moshing, and then otherwise, we're fine.
I mean, yeah, I guess, like. Like, what if line dancing, you're not even that close to somebody and you don't really move in a suggestive way?
And I just think it's funny that it was like, oh, dancing's illegal. And these kids were, I believe, having bulldozer races and a lot of like drinking and shit. Like, I do love Footloose for putting into the world the cinematic concept that a town might get so freaked out that they just ban something very mundane like that, because it's silly, but it's a really good movie premise. It's they do that in the middle section of the Halloween movies, the ones where it turns out Michael Myers is under the power of an evil rune. During that, there's a section where Haddonfield forbids Halloween, like Halloween is not allowed, but like kids wear costumes, there are parties, there's trick-or-treating, there's decorations.
Oh,
so it's unclear what's forbidden.
It's not like canceling exactly. Christmas where you just get Santa Claus to not come. Now Christmas is canceled.
Exactly. That maybe that's it. Maybe they're thinking along those lines. Every Halloween, Michael Myers shows up, except he doesn't. At this point, he's shown up one Halloween. So we're not going to allow it. So that's the only part, though. You can do the rest of Halloween, but not the bit where the murderer shows up.
Yeah.
That part's illegal.
No serial killer. Halloween's canceled.
We have made serial killing on Halloween specifically illegal.
Right. Because that's how you cancel Christmas, right? Everything else can happen and does happen and will happen. But if Santa Claus doesn't come, Christmas is canceled.
I have heard stories of, in a further, Tony explains why he hates the holidays and why you all also should hate the holidays. I have heard tales of people being frustrated that I think their kids didn't behave right on Christmas morning or whatever. And literally midday Christmas day, just like tearing down all the decorations. And
everything. Oh my God.
I've heard of that in real life happening. Yes.
Wow. That's amazing.
Because if it's not the Norman Rockwell thing, everybody feels that they failed Christmas.
Well, not everybody, but yeah.
Okay. Not me. And not William, because I didn't mention him by name, but literally everyone. In the world, except us. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Magical Talking Hat Podcast, the only podcast in the world made up of the only people who don't beat themselves up if Christmas didn't go exactly right. Don't pretend. Don't be like, oh, I'm fine about it. Oh, I don't even celebrate Christmas. Oh, I'm a different religion entirely, and we don't have Christmas. Don't believe it. I don't believe any of it. Y'all are doing it. Stop lying. We're the only ones. At least the only ones with a podcast. I'm Tony.
And I'm William, and this is episode 723.
All right. Now, it's going to be a double episode, so we're trying to space out things, but we have some emails, so that's nice. But for those of you just joining us ever, I will explain in this episode what's happening. I won't explain in the next one because I don't want it. We have a hat. It is magical in that it has its own email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. And then the people write into that email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com, with whatever the crap they want. Notes, comments, questions, diatribes, whatever. Weird ass memes. And then the hat magically, all on its own, forwards us the emails and we read them, talk about them, that kind of deal. But we got a lot of extra time to kill, so we usually just talk about other shit. That's the show. How long has it been since we last recorded? I've lost track. Was it last Thursday for some reason?
No. No, I think it was Friday.
Friday, I think we. I don't know. Okay, so it's been a week. How's your week been?
Good. So I watched that. Oh, I always forget what the guy's name is. The guy that makes the history of horror videos or whatever. CZ. Yeah, I watched his
world.
I watched this thing on the Wolfman.
The Wolfman, yeah. Eh?
Really good. I really liked it a lot. He's really good at that, I think. I almost always enjoy whatever he does.
This is the best kind of YouTuber is someone who has very specific neurodivergence, mental illness, whatever you want, that causes them to enjoy putting in a tremendous amount of work on something that is very interesting and entertaining, but like nobody else would bother.
Yeah.
Like, it's the best YouTuber is the real niche. Like, this is just a thing I obsess over, and I'm going to share it with you. And it happens to be entertaining. And he's very much that. As time has gone on, I'm like, this dude thinks about this stuff more than I do. And that's crazy, because I think about it way too much. But it's incredibly entertaining. And his theories are amazing. And his ability to craft grand unified theories of series and stuff. I love it.
Yeah, he's very, very good at that. And
even in the Wolfman one, like, they put the Wolfman in movies with Abbott and Costello because they're like, this'll make money. They were not at all thinking about, oh, what about the continuity from the last one? And yet he can create a thing that makes it a believable character going all the way through.
Right. So, I mean, I like the Universal, just about all the original Universal films. I probably like Dracula the least, but I even like that one okay. And I like Frankenstein, even though I don't really regard it as being heavily based on Mary Shelley. I like it for what it is. And I've actually seen more than one Frankenstein movie, because I also like The Bride of Frankenstein and that stuff. I think it's very good filmmaking, really, especially for the time. But I haven't seen any other films with like the Wolfman in it at all. I just saw the original Wolfman. And so hearing him, well, for one thing, I might have seen the other ones if I'd realized that Lon Chaney was in all of them. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I mean, not that I'm a huge fan of his, but it just would have felt like, oh, this is a continuation of the original story, considering he was still in it. And it was still trying to tell his story. I think I might have been interested in that. So it was kind of fun to see what, you know, in all the movies, how his character progresses and changes. I've also never heard a werewolf story before that really focused on this notion of like immortality for the werewolf. Like that's not really a part of werewolf lore. Really, it's not that they're never said to be immortal, but
it is very much a part of werewolf cinema.
Oh yeah.
Paul Naschy, arguably the most famous of werewolves in movies, who he literally played the same character in like 14 of them, and he like dies in most of them, but then he's back, and it's a whole deal. And in some of them, in a similar way, he's like trying to end his immortal curse and stuff like that.
Yeah,
But
yeah.
I have a fun fact I discovered. So this whole lot, people will say Lon Chaney Jr. and Lon Chaney sort of synonymously,
Oh, yeah,
but
Junior, I
I'm
meant.
like, yeah, and you did, yeah, because, and I'm like, but aren't these two different guys or whatever? And I looked it up. Lon Chaney Jr. is the son of Lon Chaney, who was himself a well-known actor, although mostly on the stage more than film. But here is the fun fact. Lon Chaney Jr.'s actual given name is not Lon Chaney Jr.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, he's the son of Lon Chaney, but he was born something unrelated, and he took that presumably to operate on the cachet of his famous father.
Oh.
So how weird is that?
Yeah, I mean, I
In a
love.
similar weird thing, Billy Crystal's given birth name is Billy Crystal or William Crystal. His family's actual last name. It cracks me up because this is the thing I was thinking about recently when we watched The Substance, the Demi Moore thing recently. She's playing an aging movie star named Elizabeth Sparkle. Didn't bat an eye. Makes a lot of sense as a stage name, whatever. Except early on, she runs into an old friend from her hometown from high school, and he's like, "Lizzie Sparkle? Is that Lizzie Sparkle from high school?" And I was like, "Wait, so her given birth family name was Sparkle, and she happened to become an actress." Interesting. So I'm always like, "What was Billy Crystal's actual name?" And William Crystal. He
Yeah,
was the son of Jack Crystal, and I forget his mom.
Lon Chaney Jr. And I, you know, a lot of people talk about him getting into the business because of his dad, who probably his father's most famous role was the Phantom of the Opera, right? Brilliant. Love that silent film. Love it, love it. Yeah, I guess I didn't really realize that there were several movies that Lon Chaney did as that same character. And it's like, wow, this is actually interesting. This guy's arc and what he's doing and stuff. And I was thinking, he's kind of like, it is kind of like a shared universe. And he's like the Tony Stark of this universe in a way, especially when you get
Or he
to,
would have been if they'd pulled off the cinematic later.
yeah. And in a way it's like, but that didn't really occur to me until the Abbott and Costello thing, when he was like, because I think that's the only movie where he was like really aware of, well, there's a Dracula and there's a Frankenstein, and I have to do something to prevent them from doing bad things. You know, that's the first time that kind of seemed. I mean, sometimes not sometimes, he was always with other characters in the other movies, but in the Abbott and Costello one, he was almost like this heroic, I have to stop the bad
Yeah, he was
guys.
the good guy of the
Yeah.
monster.
I thought, oh, that's really interesting. I think I might have seen that because I'm a fan of Abbott and Costello, as you know, and I have seen some of those things before. But I don't think I saw that one. I don't think I saw that one.
Not having seen most of the Universal movies, or maybe any of them, Lon Chaney Jr. is one of those who I primarily know from the part of his career where you give a small role to somebody who used to be famous. It happens in horror movies a lot, like a now 60 some old scream queen who was really never a great actor, but was in movies and was pretty. And now it's like, oh, look, we can get a cameo from famous. Lon Chaney Jr. did a lot of roles like that, like in the 70s and 80s and things like that. And that's how I primarily have always known him, which always seemed very, I always thought of him as sort of sad. And it was weird to see the earlier ones like, oh no, he was like an actor who did acting things and not just like showed up to collect his pay. I mean, not that he didn't try in his cameos, but it just, you look at him and you're like, yeah, this is definitely not the height of his acting career. So it was fun to see earlier stuff. With other ones like Boris Karloff is just fun for me to ever see him young in something. I don't count Frankenstein because although if I squint, I can see his features, he's so made up, it's so hard to tell it's him. And then every other Boris Karloff I've seen, he's an old, 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 old man. But like every once in a while, I see something of him young and I'm like, oh my God.
Yeah.
It's young Boris Karloff.
Well, he was amazing in the Mummy movie. I mean, that's, I feel like, you know, he gets to speak in the second Frankenstein movie, but his performance in the Mummy is just, yeah, I think, really great. And isn't he, wasn't he also in one of those Wolfman movies? Like, I think
he was I think so.
I think he was in one of the Wolfman movies as like, where they killed off Victor Frankenstein, and then they had like other evil scientist stand-ins for subsequent movies.
Yeah. But they had the monster in that one, and I think it was Karloff.
Yeah.
I think
so that's kind of interesting.
You should really start delving into Hammer Horror's versions of this stuff.
Yeah, I've thought of that because
they have, including the Peter Cushing Frankenstein movies. There's a whole series, and the Dark Corners guys talked about this. The character evolves through the movies. So you have like young, eager to prove himself Frankenstein in the original Frankenstein, and then over time there's like he develops a megalomania, and then attempts to sort of redress the damage he's done. It's a very interesting sort of evolution of the character. And it's Peter Cushing, so what the hell?
Right.
And like, you know, the Christopher Lee Dracula ones. The Mummy ones, which I don't remember, various people played the Mummy in that one, but apparently those ones, some of those are pretty good too. So
yeah, there's so many. I mean, even if there are some that are really bad, there might be some really good ones, you know.
Last night I happened to watch Dr. Jekyll and Sister Hyde, which is a 1971 horror film that's a new telling of Jekyll and Hyde, but in this version, in an attempt to eventually create something that will extend his life, he finds the key is female hormones, and so he injects himself with one, and so Hyde is a scary lady instead, except she's a sexy lady because it's that kind of movie. And is ridiculous, and the line of thinking which originally caused him to do his experiment, and the line of thinking which causes him to continue to take the substance to turn himself back into this lady makes zero sense whatsoever. Everybody's motivations make no sense. So I just said to myself, he's in denial, he's a closeted trans woman, and he comes up with these insane excuses that involve a lot of murder just so he can drink this liquid and be a girl for like 5 minutes. Cause sometimes it only lasts like 5 minutes.
Oh, okay.
And so then it became, I mean, he's still terrible and murders a lot of people and stuff, but like it became a much more entertaining and interesting story when I was like, he's just wrestling with trying, cause he has this whole thing about for the greater good and all this stuff. And I'm like, yeah. You just like being a girl. You feel right like that.
What do you think the elevator pitch for that was? Was that just something where someone thought, "Ooh, this will be a cool twist," or what?
I don't know how to break this to you.
Okay.
Sexy Jekyll and Hyde is borders on a subgenre. There have been many, many versions of exactly this kind of thing.
Okay.
Done on various levels of salaciousness, various levels of seriousness, all the way up into like the 80s at least. There were like modern versions that were essentially Jekyll and Hyde, but you turn into a sexy woman who is ultimately detrimental. In this one, she was kind of evil, but mostly she just got evil because they quickly got into a thing where they're like, well, only one version of us is going to survive. So they kind of fought each other, and her fighting involved more murder. So that wasn't great. But, and it is interesting. So Jekyll plays on the whole deal with Jekyll. His big issue is he's got nosy neighbors upstairs. It's a mother and her adult daughter and adult son.
Okay.
And the daughter, just from jump, is obsessed with Jekyll.
Okay.
And she keeps wanting to talk to him, and she keeps worrying about the sounds going on downstairs. She keeps bringing him food, and he really likes her. So when shit's fine, he's like, come in. He actually says the line, would it compromise you to have a drink of a glass of wine with me? Because, like, they're by themselves. And so this is the thing. But they're getting along great. But as often as not, she comes down there and he's in the midst of turning either from woman into man or from man into woman. And it's a violent thing. They do really good special effects with a lot of real basic in-camera tricks. Just shit like she's transforming back. And so we have a shot of her like putting her hands on her heads, but you don't see past the elbow, and one of them is a man's hand. And like they do, it's really cool. And frequently that's a thing, is you see from their perspective and you can see the hand, and it's either whatever one it's not supposed to be at the given moment. So that's
right.
So she's like, he's like locking the door, and also for the most part they leave their doors open. Several instances happen because people just walk in to other people's apartments just straight up. But, so, somebody sees the female version, so we have to pass her off. We have some fun where we think it's a girlfriend and the lady upstairs is sad. But then, it's his sister, recently widowed. So now the brother is like, oh, what's up? And they see each other. And at first, I'm just like, yeah, they're both horny for each other, whatever. But, like, it appears to be a real romance thing, because at one point the brother and Jekyll in his normal Jekyll form run into each other on the street, and the brother inquires about Jekyll's sister, and Jekyll talks about her like it's him, like in the first person, and the guy's like, oh, you're confused. And then Jekyll reaches out a hand to like cup his cheek, and he's like, oh, Howard. And like besotten with him, and then finally realizes what he's doing and runs like hell. And I was like, that's so Hyde is actually already in love with this brother? Like, what is, so yeah, when you change the whole thing to just be being about trans identity, I mean, it's still horrendously offensive, don't get me wrong, but it's a much more compelling story at that point. As opposed to the original one, which being a girl is the only way to be immortal, and I have to be immortal so I can cure all the diseases, because at my current research, I only cure one major life-ending disease every couple of years, and that's too slow and I'll die too soon. That is, in a nutshell, the logic behind the Dr. Jekyll's thing. Like, he doesn't get to all of that at once, but that's where we go. Like, it literally starts with he's gonna make a panacea and cure all the diseases, and his colleague's like, oh yeah, how's that going? It's like, well, it's hard, but I think I got a cure for diphtheria, and it'll probably be finalized in about a year or two, which to me, I'm like, fucking hey, this is 19th century London, you're curing diphtheria, great. And then he's like, and then what? He's like, well, then I think I'll try cholera. And the guy's like, and that'll take another year or two. Then there's typhus, and that'll take. And I'm like, these are big diseases. If he's curing them every year or two, you're solid. But no, instead he gets real focused on extending his life and figures out that it's only through women, because women have soft skin and their hair falls out less frequently. So that, I guess, means they're immortal. And so he tries it on a fly, and he successfully extends the fly's life to an equivalent of a 200-year-old human. And the fly's a girl. And he's like, no, it's not, it's a boy. No, it's a girl. And we eventually figure out it turned into a girl, which is what's happening to him. And then he seriously is like, this isn't good, but if I can, and also he has to murder people to get the stuff he needs to do it. And so we have this whole thing of like, if I have to let some people die to save more people, should I do it? And his would-be girlfriend, not knowing what he's talking about, is like, oh yeah, absolutely. So then he goes and does murders and stuff. But then later he decides murders is bad. So he does one more murders to try and solve things. And they die. I don't even remember how. It's crazy.
All of this just
and it's
sounds
so good because they play it so serious.
All of this sounds like a really bad idea. Like if someone pitched this to me, I'd say, I see what you're doing. I get the arc. I get the logic of it and everything else. It's just not interest. It's just not good. Where did you even get this weird idea?
But William, so Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde is all about like isolating parts of you and the other part. And like, so this Hyde is the opposite of Jekyll. And you know what's the opposite of boy? Sexy girl. Okay. Specifically, sexy girl is the opposite of boy. Non-sexy girl, different from boy, but not the exact opposite. Boy, gross. Girl, sexy. opposite. Boy, any boy, sexy girl. I'll draw you the chart. It's complicated, but the reasoning is sound.
Okay. Okay, right. Well.
All right. I didn't mean to talk about that movie. We just talked about movie. I didn't mean to do that one. I told myself I wasn't going to talk about that one, but it did just amuse me so much. And it's just full of lines that don't make any sense. Oh.
What? So you probably have things on your list that we can talk about a few of them without, or did you want to? I don't know.
Yeah, what your I watched some movies that we should mention.
All right.
Trying to mix these up because some of them I don't have a lot to say about. But all right. Well, let's do the big one first. We finally watched Damsel, the Millie Bobby Brown dragon movie.
Well, I didn't know you were going to watch it.
We weren't sure. It looked kind of dumb and kind of predictable. And it looked vaguely Red Notice-y. And also one of those, look, we're doing a feminism. Showing me a trailer of a feminist movie, but showing me a trailer that wanted me to believe it was feminist.
Right.
But other people liked it, and I'm like, it's a dragon, whatever. So we watched it. You've watched it, yes?
No.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I thought you were big Millie Bobby Brown heads. So
yes, but we don't want to be watch something that she's in that disappoints us. So, and I don't think I've heard anything good about it. And so we've been conflicted, right? Because we are big fans of hers, and we sometimes like her even in things we don't like because she's in it and we think she's great. But we just like, I don't want to be disappointed by this thing especially. And so we've been putting it off. So what do you think?
I see. So what I'm hearing is largely the next words out of my mouth could push you in one direction or the other quite easily.
It's not impossible. It's not impossible.
Well...
I mean, we watch things on your recommendation sometimes.
I may need to consult things. No, but what I'm hearing is you're right on the fence, so I really have all the power here. If I tell you it sucks, there's a good chance you won't watch it. And if I tell you it's awesome, there's a good chance you'll watch it. Rarely do I have this sort of direct, I'm like, I don't know which one I want to say then. I'm a little excited by the power here.
I don't know, maybe it
shall fall to my whims, William. I shall give you a trusted opinion, and that will be the deciding factor.
I think it happens more often than you think. We watch things on your recommendation quite frequently, and I don't.
Yeah,
think
but then you never tell me.
Well, that's true.
Years later, you're like, oh yeah, we watched that.
Okay. And I don't think we've ever hated it, by the way. But we haven't often like loved it or liked it, but you know, it's often been worth it to see something that you recommend.
I'll put that out there. It's pretty good.
It is. Well, why?
It's not blowing any doors off. It is not. You can definitely go through life not seeing this movie.
Okay, sure.
It is somewhat feminist. It is a tiny fraction of as feminist as it thinks it is.
Okay.
It's very much the same thing. It's a movie that wants you to believe it is feminist. Right. And in some ways it is. There's not a lot that I consider problematic in it, just dumb. And there's a lot of dumb stuff in it. Like, make no mistake, we spent the entire movie making fun of the movie.
Okay.
And it was not hard to do. But we were entertained. And afterwards, we were like, that was pretty good. It's not the most original story, but it's not a super cliche. So, like, it has turns and stuff, some of which you see coming, some of which were a surprise. Nothing mind-blowing in that, but it's slightly different than every other story like this you've seen, so that's a nice change. The effects are cool. A lot of people think the dragon looks really cool. I think they made some weird aesthetic choices. I mean, technically speaking, it's amazing. The dragon's amazing, but, like, the choices for how dragons look, I'm like, I'm not sure I would have chosen some of these, but it is voiced by a woman. I don't know her name. I need to learn her name. And all I can ever think is, if you need somebody to do a voice that sounds like a chain-smoking 50-something Israeli woman, you hire this actor. She's in everything, especially everything sci-fi and fantasy.
Yeah, I know who you're talking
about.
Like,
you know who I'm talking about.
I do.
Based on that description. She was in the recently, I know she was in The Expanse. She was a major political figure in some of that and all that. And she's everything. And I love her to death, and I can't be bothered to fucking learn her name.
Was she in Three Body Problem? Was she in that? Seems like she was.
I didn't watch Three Body Problem, but that's absolutely the kind of thing she would be in.
Yeah, but she was in Expanse for sure. I remember
yeah,
that.
Yeah, yeah. That we watched like four episodes of Expanse, and I'm like, and I saw her in that. She's in a bunch of stuff. She's Marina Sirtis bites her style sometimes nowadays that she's older. She gets cast in roles. But so this, the actress whose name we can't remember and we should be ashamed, voices the dragon. And that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
So that's fun. Ray Winston is in it, which is just hilarious because anytime you cast Ray Winston not as a Cockney criminal, he just plays whatever role with the accent of a Cockney criminal, and he does that in this too. He does a great job, except his accent is always the same. Robin Wright is in this. Weirdly, the only person in the movie without a British accent, and I'm like, it's Robin Wright. It's fucking Princess Buttercup. She could have done an English accent, but apparently didn't want to.
I like Robin Wright too. I see just
a little bit of shit. Yeah.
Yeah.
Angela Bassett's in this. And it's just fine. It's got some good action pieces. It's got some good effects. It doesn't overstay its welcome. It's under 2 hours. And if you told me, I would have said, like, if I hadn't known, I would have said it was over 2 hours, but I wouldn't have said it was too long or that I got bored. But again, we did we were Mystery Science Theatering the shit out of it because it's just the weird coincidences and silly things and like question, like it's full of plot holes and shit like that, but it is also an incredibly basic story, so you don't have to worry. And it's just a fun time. I'm getting more into that nowadays where I'm like, was this movie a good quality film that should win awards? No. Did I have fun? Yeah,
right.
And this is that. And Millie Bobby Brown acquits herself admirably, as always. Yeah, so that was fun.
Okay. Well, maybe we'll give it a look. There have been a lot of movies, like Beetlejuice is one that we haven't seen that we could have seen by now, but it's like, I'm just not in the mood for it for some reason. Like, I don't know. Movies are not a big thing for me right now. I don't know why. But
I haven't seen the original Beetlejuice.
Not the original?
Yeah, and I don't think I plan to. I haven't seen the sequel either. But I don't think I plan to.
I kind of like the original, so we'll probably see.
Most that. People do. And I've always sort of meant to and never got around to it. And then as time has gone on, because again, I watch a lot of commentary movies and TVs, or whatever, I know a lot more about it. And I think I watched the Saturday morning cartoon. I was that age.
Oh.
Which was interesting, but he's a dick.
Oh yeah, for sure.
And I don't like it because, like, I understand he is arguably the villain of the movie, but he's also the main character of the movie, and it's played for laughs. And I'm like, yeah, but he's a dick.
Well, I
So,
my
have trouble.
recollection, I was kind of surprised they made a second one because my recollection of the first one was it that its popularity was, you know, part of it. It seemed like a sort of a fresh concept in a way, right? Like ghosts who want to exorcise living people, right? And you hire this guy, and it's and he's a very mysterious, like, is he a, was he did he used to be a human, right? Like what's the deal here? And and to me, that when the popularity of something is based on something that's kind of innovative story-wise at the time, the longer, you know, it's like Halloween doesn't have the punch it used to have because now there's been a ton of things just like it. You know what I mean? So I was kind of surprised they made a sequel because I thought, well, this is the movie that I can understand why it was popular at the time. I understand why I liked it at the time, but it's like, I don't, is it popular with people now? Like, is anyone watching Beetlejuice for the first time and the original Beetlejuice for the first time in 2023 and thinking, wow, this is a great film? I couldn't believe that was true. I still can't really believe that's true, but maybe so.
I simultaneously agree with you that I don't believe that's true, and I'm shocked that you were confused about them making this. Like, well, no, and I'll throw this up here. You talked about Halloween.
Yeah. Okay, right.
Did they
Anyway,
ever
yes.
make more Halloween?
Okay, yes. But a lot of those ones they made were like not 20 years later. There wasn't a huge gap. That was a success and they kept making them. So that's a little
Yeah.
different. That's a little different. If they'd been making Beetlejuice movies for the last 30 years, I could understand a little bit more. But
All
this is like
right.
there's a huge gap.
Let's go with Bill and Ted.
Yeah, I didn't really understand when they made Bill and Ted again.
Let's go with Axel F.
yeah, that I don't know. That's a little bit more understandable to me because I think in my head, I don't think of Axel F or those movies as being the kind of thing you make a ton of sequels on, like Halloween and
But my point is, there was a huge gap. In fact, they were two wildly successful movies, and then a movie that tanked hard many years later, and then decades after that, they decided to make a new one.
Oh, I didn't know about the tanked hard one, I guess. I
Yeah,
mean,
Beverly Hills Cop 3 exists, and it went very poorly, and I still will punch Hector Elizondo in the face if I ever see him,
okay.
who I love, except for that movie, and so I'm gonna punch him.
Yeah, I think I just think in my head that, first of all, it's about as it, you know, I'm thinking of the horror genre and the reason, like, a lot of horror movies have other ones, but they're like right very soon after, you know, the reason they keep making them is because they are popular for some reason. And that if they didn't make a whole bunch of Beetlejuice movies right after, it's because it wasn't that popular. So that's why there's a gap, which means why would you make it more a lot later? I don't know. Maybe that's stupid to think that now that I say it out loud, but I think that's
I
just what my
mean,
head was thinking.
it absolutely is. Don't get me wrong. But again, it's the same thing as always, William. Nobody's sitting around saying, you know what? Artistically, I really feel like there's a need for more Beetlejuicing.
It's a
People
money
loved
thing. I
when we
know.
juice that beetle. It's always a money, and it is not remotely uncommon. I cannot think of more examples right here, but I promise you, look right now and you will find. Well, you'll find series and things too, but you will find plenty of individual movies that were wildly popular that did not have any sequels that now, in our current era, it's been 20 or 30 years and recently they have made a sequel.
Yeah, regardless of
It's like a
thinking about,
whole vibe right now. No, and don't get me wrong, most of them have tanked. Most of them have not done well. But people, here's what people are imagining people are like.
okay,
The movie making people.
okay, good.
They're like,
That's what
okay,
I'll.
people saw Beetlejuice probably around the time it came out, maybe years later, whatever. But, you know, pre-2000, people saw Beetlejuice, loved it, showed it to other people. They loved it. It was a phenomenon. It got its own Saturday morning cartoon show, which is insane
Yeah, and it
for its
did.
topic.
That's
It was
true.
huge at the time. And people, now it's been a couple decades after them really loving it, maybe seeing it a whole bunch when they were younger, still remember it as awesome.
Oh, nostalgia train.
The average person does not sit around and say, I don't know if that holds up. And the average person, if they watch it now, still laughs hysterically because those bits and jokes are grandfathered in and they made them laugh and they would quote them with their friends. Mm-hmm. And so now when they see it, it's just the same deal. Similar to how I am with Beverly Hills Cop movies. There's a lot wrong with those movies. But there's some clever stuff, but also there's things that just used to make me laugh and it still makes me laugh. And I know it's dumb for anybody else, and I don't blame anyone else watching it the first time and not laughing, but it makes me laugh. And people are like, that's awesome. And the movie people assumed if we said, guess what? We're making a Beetlejuice sequel. And Tim Burton is doing it, the guy who made Beetlejuice, and Michael Keaton is doing it, the guy who was Beetlejuice. What they think audience people are hearing is, we have a Beetlejuice that is exactly what you loved, but also new. So it is new content that is already exactly what you love, and you believe that you love it because you have not reevaluated your opinion on it since you loved it.
Okay, so nostalgia is what you're saying.
Oh, 100%. Almost every major film made today is nostalgia.
But there's
almost every, even when it's not directly, it's fucking Stranger Things.
Yeah,
Stranger Things has a lot going for it, but Stranger Things exists and was pitched because nostalgia.
Well, I mean, I'd argue that all the superhero movies are about nostalgia, either because of the comic you read or the cartoon you watched when you were a kid. Yeah, I get all that. I think sometimes the piece I miss about that is that, for me, I guess I think of, I'm nostalgic for, I get nostalgic about things too, but I'm nostalgic for that thing. Like, the new thing is not necessarily going to be the old thing. I mean, I think that's why some of these things crash, is because people go to the thing and they realize, oh, this isn't actually like that thing. Or
it's why most of them crash.
Yeah.
And it's why Axel F. and apparently the second Beetlejuice tend to be the exception. I believe the later Bill and Ted movie did not do well.
We haven't even seen that yet, but we probably will.
I haven't even seen the second one. I only saw the first one when the third one came out so that we could watch all of them, and then just didn't bother.
Yeah.
Again, it's one that I can appreciate what it was at the time, but is no. People fall for it.
You think it's true that people aren't very... Oh, yeah. So you just said people fall for it. So you think it's true that some people aren't really fully aware of, when they like an old thing, that there's some nostalgia attached to it, and they might not actually like, in today, in their adult sensibilities, they might not like a new thing like that because it doesn't have all those nostalgic things attached. Like, they're not aware of how much of what they like is just sentimental.
On a very personal level, I believe that is true of a ton of people.
Yeah.
I believe that's often true of me, except my brain is such that I'm constantly reevaluating. Mm-hmm. And so I won't let myself. Like, even now, part of my brain was Axel F really good? But I think it was. I think it was a good time. And Trish, who had only ever seen the first movie, also enjoyed it. So I do recommend that movie to people. But here's the thing. I do believe a lot of people feel that way, or at least, because why would you? Like, I understand you and I do because we're broken, but why would you reevaluate shit you like in case maybe now you don't like it? Like, best case scenario, it's exactly what you already thought. And worst case, now you're like, oh, shit, that was something I treasured, and now I realize I can't anymore.
Well, I think people who are interested in storytelling are going to notice it, right? Because when you're a storyteller, you do rely some on experiences you've had. And I think you're going to be a better storyteller when you're 50 if you can say, yeah, I love Star Wars, but I also understand that as I got older, it's not that great for this, 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 and this reason, right? Like the original Star Wars movie.
And the one I pull out a lot, it's not for me.
That too. So, you know,
what I wanted out of Star Wars is not what the current consumers want out of Star Wars. So they're being given different Star Wars, but, which makes sense and also doesn't harm my Star Wars.
Right. But it's important for a person who's interested in storytelling to be able to make those distinctions. But for a person who's not interested in telling their own stories, they don't have to make those distinctions. They can think that Star Wars is actually high art or something, just like they did when they were seven, if they want to. But I think if you're interested in storytelling and telling your own stories, and if you're going to be good at it at all, you're going to have to learn to make those types of distinctions, because you have to know how to make those distinctions in your own storytelling, I think.
Oh, yeah. I would agree.
Yeah.
I don't think that's most people.
No, you're right. It's not. It's not. That makes sense. That makes sense.
And I get caught on this. I was very nervous to rewatch The Goonies. Because I remember The Goonies quite fondly, but I already also remember bits. I remember all the weird shit with the Fratellis. I remember Sloth. I remember Data. I remember underage non-consensual kissing. Like, there's a lot of stuff. And I was just like, oh, I don't know if I can do this.
I've never seen
it. But I did, because a bunch of friends wanted to at a gathering or whatever. I was like, all right, do it. Kill it. Kill Goonies for me. I don't care. And what I found out is all of that stuff is in there, and it is horrible and not entertaining. And outside of that stuff, which is about 80% of the movie, it's still really good. Like, that 20% sucks. There's also all the stuff with Chunk and the Trouble Song. Like, that part sucks. But surprisingly, the rest is still good. And so, but that's a difficult, like, I literally drug my feet on watching it again. And it's why still, I don't plan to watch the original Ghostbusters ever again. Mm-hmm. I already don't like it as much as I used to, just like thinking back on it and shit. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, if I watch it, I'm pretty sure I will come out of that not liking Ghostbusters, and I don't feel like doing that.
I've never seen Goonies. I probably will, since it's such a cultural touchstone.
It's good. I mean, again, those parts are weird, but I mean, it's also one of the few pre everything everywhere all at once roles you can see Ke-Huy Quan in.
Yeah. I've never seen that.
They write him an incredible stereotypical character. He does a great job. He's a good actor. He's always been a good actor.
I've never seen Gremlins either. I don't know if I...
Gremlins, well, and both of these are Zemeckis, right?
Isn't
Goody Zemeckis? Gremlins. No. Gremlins is Dante. Gremlins is Joe Dante. I remember this because I'm always amazed, because I don't like most Joe Dante movies. And I'm like, but he did Gremlins. Good job. Gremlins is fun in that it is sort of unique. I mean, there were copies later, but nobody Gremlins like the original Gremlins. And so it is very sort of seminal in its way. I don't know that I love it, but it's a thing that nobody really had done, and nobody really managed to do the same since, I think.
Well,
I have rewatched it a few times, but
it's a little surprising I haven't seen it, because not because premise wise or anything it's necessarily my thing, but because they utilize puppeteering in that a lot, and some very good puppeteering. And so that's what would make me interested into seeing how they did that. And if, you know, because I actually am fascinated by that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But I haven't seen it.
I have never seen the sequel. I sort of planned. It's one of those, like, I do kind of want to see it, but I never want to see it now. I don't think it's very good. Mm-hmm. Its whole thing is mostly just there's a lot of weird, different hybrid gremlins.
Yeah, that's what I've
and
heard
that's
about
sort
that
of the joke. It's like a few people know this, but Deadpool and Wolverine, it's just a rough retelling of Gremlins 2, the new batch, but they put in like cameos instead. But it's basically the same story, as I understand it.
I thought the second one was supposed to have a gremlin with like lipstick, like a female gremlin. Yeah. Like
there's a girl, there's a sexy girl gremlin, there's a bat gremlin, there's a super intelligent gremlin who's our main villain, there's an electricity gremlin.
And was all that to sell toys or something? Like now we can make different gremlin toys.
I don't know. It was somebody got there is a absolutely brilliant just chef's kiss of a Key and Peele sketch about the making of it. And it's the writer's room and they brought in a script doctor and one was playing that and it very quickly becomes a thing like we need more kinds of gremlins. And it's just a brainstorm. Like everybody gets to pick and he writes them on the whiteboard. Like electricity. You know what? That don't make sense. But yeah, it's in the movie. Electricity gremlins. It is a beautiful sketch. I highly recommend. He's like, you get a gremlin. You get a gremlin. That sounds like you got some unresolved issues there, but we'll put it in a movie. Like it's the whole thing. It's very fun. But the original Gremlin, and also you got to watch it for that Phoebe Cates scene.
The second one or the first one?
No, the first one.
Oh, I don't know. I don't know what you're talking about. So,
all right, I'm going to spoil this for you because it's too good to. So, I don't remember the actor who plays the lead. He didn't go on to do a ton. He's around, but whatever. But Phoebe Cates is the female lead and is his. Not girlfriend, but like love interests, or they're friends or whatever. And early on, we had this thing about her family doesn't really celebrate Christmas. And he's like, why are you religious? Or you, I think he says, are you Hindu or something? He's made in 85, whatever. Doesn't answer. The thing goes on. Eventually, gremlins happen. And eventually, our hero and our heroine meet up as the town's being gremlined. And they run, and the power's out in places, and they run into some empty building and it's dark and he's trying to find if the phones work or anything. I want to stress, no, we'll get back to this. All right. So at this point, while they're standing and she's sort of catching her breath, she explains that when she was young on Christmas Eve, they were getting the tree ready and everything and waiting for Dad to come home and he didn't come home. And he was missing, and they didn't know why. And then something weird happened where there was a smell in the house that wouldn't go away, and they eventually had to call somebody in, and they found out it was coming from the chimney, and they went and found out they found the body of her father in the chimney. He had dressed up as Santa and was going to come down the chimney, but he had slipped and broke his neck. The last line of her story is, and that's how I found out there's no Santa Claus.
Okay, I remember this. Hearing about this, yeah.
Protagonist is not listening. Full on. Like, you keep cutting to him, and he's, like, checking for supplies and chesting the phone or whatever. And he doesn't respond, and it never comes up again. And Gremlins is more comedy than horror. Like, it's a comedy movie. And she does a great job. Like, you're believing it. It's Phoebe Cates. She's a good actor. Just what?
I mean, while you're watching it, it doesn't seem as silly as it sounds by you what you're telling me, because that sounds a little ridiculous.
No, well, they play it super straight. That's what I'm saying.
And other it's effective. Than the fact
that are well, no, it's not.
Okay,
it's insane.
Okay, I just thought, except wow, that's so dumb. At the time,
like when I first watched it, it didn't really register. Like was years later where somebody was like, remember that scene? Like, I think I watched a YouTube video and I was like, yeah. What? I mean, I think people have always sort of talked, like it's a cultural touchstone. About it. Remember that thing? Phoebe Cates' dad died in the chimney? And like,
yeah, I mean, just, I've even heard of it. I've heard of it, yeah.
Yeah, like... But no, it's never not been bonkers.
Okay. But you've restored my faith in humanity.
It is one of those that, like, it's a lot of things that, like, years later, you're like, how did none of us see this?
Well, I mean, if you're young enough, I can imagine, but.
And it, well, and she tells it real well. You really get caught up in it. It's like a separate little movie.
Yeah, yeah.
It's just such a different movie, and we never acknowledge that the movie was in there. The rest of the film. There is no completion to that arc at all. It doesn't affect their relationship. Again, I don't think he hears. I don't think he even notices. It's crazy. All right. So we are out of time. We did not get to email today. We'll have to do some major emails next week, which for us will just be a few minutes away. So in the meantime, please keep writing us, themagicaltalkinghead@gmail.com. Listen to us next week and go to the blog, magicaltalkinghead.com, and talk to us. This episode has mostly been me teaching William about movies. So if you have things you want to teach William about, movies or otherwise, go to the blog. Because he needs to learn so many things.
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.